Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A muggy summer evening in Vermont, in a swampy area, just as the sun is going down and the mosquitoes are thick in the air, might not sound like a good place to hang out. But it's ideal if you're a little brown bat or a bat researcher.
I would say of all the places I've been, the mosquitoes are definitely the worst here. You pull up in your truck and you'd better get in and out pretty quickly, or when you leave that night, you're going to have a truck full of mosquitoes.
Alyssa Bennett is the small mammals biologist for Vermont Fish and Wildlife. And on this particular muggy and buggy night, she was heading up a team of researchers, interns, and volunteers to study a population of bats in Addison County. A colony of little brown bats roost in a covered bridge over the Otter Creek each summer, and biologists have been studying them for almost a decade.
Back in 2006, before all the population crashes of a lot of these other now state-threatened and endangered species, the Indiana bat was really the only one we were concerned about. It was a federally endangered species. And there was a concern that because bats were living in this bridge and the Vermont Agency of Transportation was going to be doing some work to restore the covered bridge, they were worried that they'd disturb the bats. So they contacted us. We came out. We set up some nets and trapped bats exiting the bridge and found out that they weren't Indiana bats. They actually were little brown bats, which at the time were one of the most common species. Scott, in his wisdom, my supervisor, Scott Darling, said, well, let's put bands on them so that if we see them show up in a cave, we'll know where they came from. Amazingly, then white-nose syndrome hit, and we saw these enormous population declines, really devastating. Not only did we see colonies like this decrease, the whole eastern side of the state pretty much has no little brown bat colonies anymore. And they used to be everywhere, hundreds, thousands of bats in a colony. So we came back here in 2011 after seeing those population declines and captured bats again. And then 2012, 13, 14, here we are, 2015. So this is one of only a few sites that we monitor closely. But we have the longest records that I know of for the species of bats surviving through white-nose syndrome.
So we mean right here?
Right here. Two bats that were captured in 2006, and then we captured them again, I believe, in 2013. So we know that not only have those bats survived a few years since the disease, they actually survived through the entirety of the disease. So we're collecting research samples tonight to answer some questions that some of our collaborators have over in different universities and colleges around the country. And they're trying to find out what is so special about these individuals that they're surviving when other bats aren't. So we'll actually take some samples that will allow them to look at the underlying genetics and even protein structures of those bats to find out if there's anything special. I don't know whether it's something special about this colony or if we have a situation going on where bats, for example, have moved from the eastern side of the state, the only ones that were left, and they've all kind of congregated in these areas. It's a question that everyone's still trying to look into.
Bennett and her team set up a couple different kinds of nets to trap the bats as they came out of the covered bridge and two nearby bat boxes. Most of the bats here are females and they're young. The males don't stay with the babies, so they're able to wander more than the females. Because they're mammals, they nurse their young. When the pups are first born, they stay in the nesting sites while their mothers go out hunting. But by late July, the pups are flying, or volant, and the whole colony comes out to feed on aquatic and flying insects. Pretty quickly after sunset, a few unlucky bats find themselves ensnared in a kind of trap called a harp net. The bats fly into the vertical strings of the harp net and slide down into a little plastic trough. Seven bats beat their little wings against the plastic sheeting, and the researchers hang back, hoping to catch a few more unsuspecting subjects. Another type of net, called a mist net, is set up in between some trees in a corridor that the bats often take from the bridge to a nearby field. Sweeping the light from her headlamp across the thin netting, Fish and Wildlife intern Jessica Ralston spots a bat and moves over to disentangle it.
Right now, I am trying to tangle this little fellow here. He's a bat out from the net. Oh, it's a tricky process. This is actually my first time untangling a bat. He keeps getting his arms stuck, though. Alyssa, I can't tell if this is around his neck or not. I don't want to hurt him. Just like, I got three parts of him free.
Oh, good. Okay, here, I'll take him.
You got him?
Yeah.
He's latched on me right now.
There you go.
Oh, there you go, buddy.
So, I always picture, Jane, that this must feel like some kind of alien experience to them. You know how people describe their alien experiences as these bright lights and then all these invasive body examinations happening? And then, of course, that's exactly what we're doing. We're shining bright lights in their eyes. They were just out foraging for the night, and then this very strange, bizarre, scary thing happens. And then we take all sorts of measurements on them, and then we let them go. And, you know, I think they must say to their friends, this crazy thing happened. I was just flying around, and then the bright lights, and I was abducted, and all their friends are like, right.
So now, he's going to go to processing once we get them all untangled.
The bat is placed in a small cloth bag that's carefully tied up so it can't squirm out. Bennett says the team tries to work quickly and to do minimal handling on the bats to try to keep their stress levels down. But the research is critical to finding a cure for white nose syndrome. Since the disease was found in New York caves in 2006, it has killed more than 5 million bats, and it's spread to most of the states and the Canadian provinces in the eastern side of the continent. 11 different hibernating species are affected by the fungus that causes the syndrome. The fungus can damage the skin and wing tissue of the bats, and infected bats often wake during winter hibernation and fly out of the caves, where they die of starvation or cold. Mortality rates hover around 90%, which is why this population of little brown bats is so exciting to scientists.
Tom, will you help me close the other mist net over here?
When Alyssa Bennett and the other researchers have gathered up 13 bats, they head over to Alyssa's truck to conduct those examinations. The setup is a little clunky. It's dark and still very mosquito-y. The assembled team is using headlamps for illumination, and they've spread out all kinds of test tubes and rubber gloves and swabs and a weighing scale on the bed of the truck. They're collecting data for a couple different research projects that scientists have asked them for help with, and each has a different protocol with a very specific and sometimes confusing set of instructions.
If you can figure out these data sheets, I thought I understood. Thank you.
Bennett gently picks up a bag, and with a gloved hand, she removes a small bat. It weighs little more than a nickel.
Wow, you're very light-colored. You look like a young bat. I'm going to bet that this is a young of the year. This is a very, very beautiful, light, dusty color to this bat, and sometimes the young of the year have that really light hair color. So this is a female. Feisty, that's good. So I'm just checking a couple of species-specific things. There's no keel on the calcar. The calcar is a little bone that comes off the back foot and gives some structure to the wing membrane on some bats. And on an Indiana bat, it would have almost like the shape of a keel of a boat. And on a little brown bat, it does not. And also the toe hairs extend out beyond their toes, unlike an Indiana bat. And their ears would just come to the tip of their nose if you bend them forward, whereas in a northern long-eared bat, they would extend a few millimeters beyond the nose. So those are some of the features we look at. This is the little brown bat. Milu, we call them. Yeah. Some people call them Lucy's. So I can tell that this is a young of the year. So we can hold her. So she's not an adult, so we won't be able to use her for the sampling. We'd have to use her for the genomic sampling.
Some of the research has to be done on adult bats who have overwintered, presumably in the presence of white nose syndrome.
What these researchers are looking for is to find out why are certain bats surviving when others aren't. So they're taking samples from inside what we call the endemic zone. So the disease has been here for some time in Vermont, nearly as long as anywhere. And then they're taking some on kind of that leading edge where the disease has just hit. And then they're actually sampling bats that haven't been affected yet by white nose syndrome. So let's say we did find there was some association with survivors, such as something about their habitat, something about the underlying genetics, or in this case, something about the bacteria that's on their wings. And in that last scenario, the bacteria that's on their wings, people are actually looking into possible treatments for white nose syndrome, where you might actually take something that already lives in the environment of the bat in the cave or mine, or is on their own body. And if you were to in some way just had more, for example, that beneficial bacteria, could you in fact crowd out the fungus or protect the bat more? Could you protect bats that are more highly affected? So they're actually taking this information about the survivors, and then they're trying to find out if that's something they can apply to any treatment options.
So the team looks for another bat they can get a wing biopsy and other data from.
So this is a female. Yep, Myotis lucivicus, so Milu again. So we're just going to see if this is an adult. Yeah, so that looks like an adult. All we can tell is if they're the young of the year or they're an adult.
Or if they're banded, you'll be able to tell what year you banded them?
We don't have the data right in the truck with us, but we can go back and look through our records.
Is that five?
In fact, later in the evening, the team did find a banded bat. When Bennett got back to her office the next day, she looked up the band number and made a remarkable discovery. This was one of the very individuals that Vermont Fish and Wildlife had banded back in 2006. Bennett said by phone that it was very exciting to find this bat. But just because she and a few of her colony mates have survived, that doesn't mean little brown bats are in the clear.
Because the truth is we're still seeing this species and the northern long-eared bat appear dead and dying outside of our largest hibernacula that we monitor in the winter. So knowing that, and knowing that there are concerns that we're seeing a lower reproductive rate than we maybe did before white nose syndrome, those things do have us concerned still that this bat will hang on, even though their numbers seem to be stabilizing at this low 10% level.
At the best of times, little brown bats only have one pup a year, so recovery will be slow, and none of us will be alive to see numbers like we had before white nose syndrome. Nonetheless, Bennett says finding a bat like this, originally banded back in 2006, is a hopeful sign for the longevity of the species.
She had been an adult female at that time, and so then if you bring us to 2015, that says that she's at least 10 years old. And not only that, but she had survived every winter that white nose syndrome has been known to be in Vermont. And that, I think, is an amazing feat. And she had some scars to show for it.
Little brown bats can live 20, sometimes even 30 years. So with any luck, not only will this tiny bat continue to thrive, but she might help ensure the survival of her entire species.